So a few weeks ago, at the church I am serving, the congregation had taken a vote to endorse marriage equality in the state of Rhode Island. And it was a big deal. It took a lot of time, effort, conversation, reflection. It was a hard thing. During that press conference that in which we announced this to the general public, which was part of the deal, we're on this push to see if we can't achieve that legal status in Rhode Island, I quoted a talking point that I found on a website for Unitarian Universalists who are engaged in this political battle. And it was a great line, I thought. It just sort of resonated and rolled well. It was, homosexuality is not the sin. Homophobia is the sin. Now, both as a Buddhist and as a Unitarian Universalist, sin's a somewhat slippery term, and what is it actually supposed to mean anyway? But it was a great soundbite. And for the political work, it really was something to lay out there. And indeed, it turns out that's the sole thing that got copied and repeated endlessly in our local media. So 2 weeks after that, I found myself invited onto a radio program, one of those call-in talk shows, in which I was warned in advance, would be expected to defend that proposition. When I found myself on the phone at home, waiting for the previous segment, which was about public television funding, to end, and I heard this little click, and a young woman came on and said, "Mr. Ford, Reverend Ford, Gene is going to wind this segment up, and we will begin the segment with you right after the commercial." That's when I started hyperventilating. Case 25 of the Blue Cliff Record. Lian Hua Feng's staff. The hermit Lian Hua Feng took up his staff before his assembly and asked, "Why didn't the old teachers remain here after they reached it?" The audience was silent. He himself answered, "It has no power for the way." Again he asked, "After all, what is it?" The audience was again silent, and again he answered for them, "Carrying my staff across the back of my neck, going to the 1,000, the 10,000 peaks."
Well, that took me totally by surprise.
Why didn't the old teachers remain here? Where is this here? Here on retreat? Here with perhaps a settled mind? Here with plenty of space to meet our unsettled mind? This practice is not about remaining anywhere, not about getting anything, any state of mind, any kind of equanimity that might keep us from hyperventilating when we are about to go on to a radio interview. this, all of the fruits of our practice, and there are fruits of practice, but we can't hold on to them. Holding on to them has no power for the way. Holding on to any idea of ourself, any of the momentary selves that arise, the good Zen student, or if we can't find that one, the bad Zen student. First of all, we can't hold on to these. Not just that we mustn't. They, in fact, cannot be held on to. But the grasping after them has no power for the way. It's worth sitting zazen. It's worth going on retreat. It's worth seeing that the waves on the surface of the mind, all of the mental formations that continuously rise, roil, and pass away, that those do not contain all of reality, that there's truths that cannot be contained in any of our stories, in any of our experience, in any of our states of mind. Recognizing this is worthwhile. And then we need to give it all away, throw it all away, walk past, through the peaks of comfort, the peaks of realization, and head right back down into the valleys, into our off of day-long sit lives, and meet ourselves there too. Mind after 6 hours of zazen is different than mind in the middle of your busy week. But it's not that one of them is good, or one of them is real practice, or one of them is real zen. Power, the power of the way comes from meeting each moment, whatever it contains, whatever self has arisen. And when we really let that in, then the question, why didn't the old teachers remain here after they reached it, takes on a whole new level of not importance. Before they reached it, after they reached it, in the middle of reaching it, just meeting that, never having reached it. This way is powerful. It is a powerful tool for enabling us to be free amid, in the center of, within our suffering. That's the power of the way. And that is exactly what we are practicing as we meet whatever self rises and pass away in each moment of zazen. And so now, if you would like to sit comfortably and ask questions, comments, complaints, rebuttals.
Questions. Can you, either of you, say more about what you mean when you use the word free?
It's the freedom to be bound in exactly the degree that we're bound. The freedom to meet ourselves as we are. And what it isn't is the freedom to be someone else. To be someone who is having a different experience. To be, it's not the freedom of, to have different karma. But with this karma, we have the freedom to be right here. And ultimately, this is the freedom to die. And the freedom and it's the freedom to suffer when we're suffering. We don't have the freedom to not suffer when we're suffering. But there is something real in meeting and receiving even a suffering moment, even a bound moment. And James will clarify that for you.
Actually, the reason I wanted to add a little bit more in there was I've found myself thinking a lot about the Fox koan of late, and I think most of us are familiar with the setup about the ancient master who asks if he a person who is awake is bound by the law of cause and effect or not, says such a person is not, and ends up having 500 kind of bad lives out of it. And the part that really caught me of late is actually there's this little coda. There's this where Bai Jiang is the person who's the hero of this story. His student Wang Bo, at the very end comes up, and after the story is all resolved and we see that we're one with the law of cause and effect, asks a very interesting question, and that is, well, what if the teacher, the original ancient teacher, had made the right response all the time? And there's this kind of Marx Brothers thing where Bai Jiang calls Wang Bo up, and before he can whack him, his student gives him a slap on the cheek, setting off barrels of laughter that all, you know, Zen people will just really enjoy. The heart of the matter is, but what is the answer to that question? What if he said the right answer each time? And the kind of the inside deal is, 500 lives is a fox. Where is our freedom? What is our freedom? And I think here, you know, part of the deal is that our practice is actually, it's pretty worthless. You know, it doesn't get us a job. It doesn't fix our psychological problems. It doesn't seem to do much of anything except throw our hearts wide. And what I love about this is this particular case, 25 in the in the Blue Cliff, is that we're invited to step off the 100-foot pole. To not, we got to climb it. We got to find this spacious place. We got to find this openness. But if we cling to it, as Josh said, we're screwed. And unfortunately, if we leave it, we're screwed as well.
So please feel free to be screwed.
This is what we needed to bring our sticks in.
So on the theme of being screwed, when the heart is wide open, it's a position of such vulnerability. Yeah. Do you have any advice about that?
So the kind of the great bait and switch of spiritual practice is that it isn't about having better, stronger, more impenetrable armor. It's actually about taking off such armor as we have. And it actually enables us to feel pain, to feel the sufferings of the world, all the sufferings of the world, more exquisitely. And the reason we can do this is because we verify for ourselves that pain doesn't destroy us. We can be vulnerable because there's nothing we need to protect.
It is a new stance. And it's a fascinating place because we don't succeed. We screw up and we defend and we protect. But there's part of us in that opening that discovers new strategies. There is something in the Sendokai, where is it that we just chanted this morning? Somebody really hates you, it's best to bow down. I've always thought that's one of the stupidest pieces of advice. And most of the time, I don't. And I find myself constantly invited into this open-hearted place where when I'm just a little lucky and just a little smarter than I usually am, usually that being totally vulnerable and totally open also means that the ego defenses that I'm mainly actually working with rather than meeting the person and the issue are also kind of pushed out, and the issue becomes becomes something different, and it's not about protecting myself at that moment. And sometimes there's a valuable lesson for me in it. Usually it means there's some little way through for us. Of course, then I close down and strategize and figure out how to get revenge.
And the other thing that's important to notice is that when we do have that armor on, if we really pay attention, it's not working all that well. And so what we have is a belief in our capacity to protect ourselves from hurt. And it doesn't actually protect us from hurt, and we do great harm from that stance.
But I think part of what you're saying is it's not about staying in that open-hearted place. All you can do is wait a while, and then you kind of close up again. But that ideally we close a little less tightly over time, and then we open and then close a little less tightly, and that when we're closed, we behave a little more skillfully than we used to.
Right.
And then it's going to stay open all the time.
Right. That's the spiral quality of the path. We keep coming back to the same open, and now we're closed, and now we're open. But each spiral outward is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So the path is real. Practice does matter. It is worth doing. And it doesn't mean our heart won't be closed. And we can also be with our closed heart open-heartedly.
So going back to Alan's question, this open-hearted place, we're very vulnerable. And it seems to me that there are things to defend. And that there are boundaries that need to be set. And that it can be difficult to be clear about how to deal with that. I had a situation this week where a minister friend came to me and said, "Oh, here's this guy who he's waiting to get on disability or something or other. And do you have a place where he could stay for a while until he gets his disability thing straightened out?" And I said, "No, I don't. Let's see what else we can do." And how does that fit for you?
It's not a matter of not making decisions in the relative world. It's a matter of how we hold our heart with regard to the suffering. So in a way that the openness is to say, "No, I can't help you with that," but not to hide behind like righteousness, and to recognize to really suffer with this being, and to suffer with this being who has such difficult choices to make and can't save the world with the largesse of his spirit as much as he wishes he could. So even bowing down to those who speak ill of us and treating us bitterly, even bowing down isn't a matter of just rolling over and taking it. It isn't that isn't what this path is about.
A couple of things. One is, last I heard, you didn't live by yourself, and so you really couldn't make an invitation like that unilaterally. You don't know what the right thing is. And I noticed you didn't say, "Therefore, goodbye." It was, "Well, is there something else we can do?" And that little motion, even if it didn't lead to a solution, was your part of the bargain. You did not just turn away because it was inconvenient. You continued the engagement. And for me, that continuing the engagement seems to be a big part of it. In this political thing that we're involved in down in Rhode Island, we have opponents. And I'm thinking legislature-wise. And the big thing for me out of my practice is to try and remember these are not enemies, these are fellow human beings, and on a pragmatic level, you never know what's going to happen down the line. So, for instance, I was at an awards luncheon for people who work in the field of homelessness and hunger. And always like the irony of going to a luncheon for hunger issues, but it's part of your deal, you know. And the governor was there, and both of the state senators. It's a big deal. I walk in. I'm going over to my table, and there's Senator Metz. Son of a bitch, Senator Metz has been one of the principal thorns in the side of those of us who are engaged in the marriage equality issue, and I glared at him and went and sat down. And during the general acknowledgments, it was pointed out that last year, I'd missed last year's thing, he had heard a discussion about particular funding problem around hunger. And he went straight back and the next day gave a speech at the Senate that restored the funding. And you just don't know, you know. He didn't deserve my glare. I mean, he deserved my opposition in this other issue, but in this other issue, you know, we are at one, you know. And a little bit more pillow time, and I might be able to actually engage him fully as a human being.
Or not.
At 40 years, that seems to be one of my options.
that's what I'm struggling with all the time, is that how instinctively my heart closes up in response to somebody else's heart being closed.
Right.
That's what just, it just, and to do, to bow down instead is like, oh, geez, sometimes like, I can't get myself to do it. And maybe that's part of the spiral of practice, that eventually it won't be such a Herculean effort, but boy.
Well, my experience out of the thing is that my struggle never works. You know, but every once in a while, the universe, you know, surprises me, yeah, and then I'm open-hearted, and there's some association with all this stupid pillow time. Yeah.
And there is compassion that can arise out of really just seeing how damn hard it is for us to be compassionate, and so seeing our own closed heart, then when that guy has a closed heart, we can recognize, yeah, that happens, doesn't it? This is why our shikantaza is not a practice of certainty. It's a practice of not knowing. And whenever we're sure about what that guy is doing wrong, that is a 100% reliable thing that there is something we can work with. And that's the meaning of bowing down, recognizing that in this very moment, that's the thing to work with.